Okay, we begin our class of Life of the Messiah, and we continue on, and we're looking at Jesus' power over disease and death. And remember, the context of everything is that Israel has officially rejected their Messiah. They have blasphemed the Holy Spirit, and this is year two. They have made their formal declaration to reject Messiah on the basis that the miracles that he's doing is that he is doing them by the power of the devil. And so they have formally rejected him. Therefore, Messiah now has changed his tactics and is now preparing the disciples to be the foundation for the church. And again, this age of the church that we're in was a mystery, was not talked about. But it was always in God's plan. He knew Israel would reject their Messiah. And so he is going to make this plan come to fruition. So he's got to prepare the disciples. And so he has already been preparing them. Previously we saw that he's showing them his power over nature. He has showed them his power over demons. And now he's going to show them his power over disease and death. And to see that he is the true Messiah, even though Israel has rejected him, and Israel is going to be temporarily set aside. They don't know for how long, but obviously Israel has been set aside for over 2,000 years now. And eventually God will pick up the plan with Israel and use her again. But in the meantime, he's using the church. And so he's preparing them for this. And so things have changed. The policy for miracles have changed. In now this context, miracles are done in secret a lot of times, just among the disciples in a private party, as you'll see in this text. Miracles now are requiring faith. Whereas before, he did miracles for Israel to prove that he was the Messiah publicly and did not require faith. But now he requires faith. So the policy on miracles have changed. His policy and teaching has changed. Before, he spoke plainly to the nation of Israel. Once Israel rejects their Messiah, he does not speak plainly anymore. He speaks in parables, as predicted by Isaiah. And when speaking parables to Israel, he is lessening the judgment on them because they won't understand what he's talking about because they've already made their decision. So he'll take the disciples aside normally and then explain the parable to them. And so his way of teaching, miracles have changed, and his whole mode has changed, and now it's about preparing the disciples. Okay, so what is he going to teach them? He's going to teach them that he has the power over disease and death. And so we go in our outline on page 32, and we read Mark 5:21-43 about this episode here. And it says, "Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he had saw him, he fell at his feet, and begged him earnestly, saying, My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live. So Jesus went to him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. Immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up. And she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, Who touched my clothes? But his disciples said to him, You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, Who touched me? And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. While he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not be afraid, only believe." And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he had came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him. Look at that. They ridiculed him. But when he had pulled them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. He took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumi," which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Immediately the girl rose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. Now notice a few things before we start in to our analyzation of the text. Notice this is a private miracle. Those who were ridiculing him, he took them, they were told to go outside, and only Peter, James, and John and the mother and father went into the room where the little girl was. So it was a private miracle, and not even all the disciples saw it. Notice that even before that, the woman who was healed of her blood infirmity exercised personal faith in him, and I'll show you that in just a second. So you have the requirement of personal faith, private miracle, and so things have definitely changed in his policy of how he's going about his works. Okay. Let's go through some bullet points about what this is about. For the disciples, this is a lesson in Jesus' power. Okay? Because Jesus is God, he has demonstrated his power over nature, he has demonstrated his power over the demonic, and now he's demonstrating his power over disease and death. So, for the woman and Jairus, it is a lesson of faith. Notice that both of them are having faith. Even though Israel has rejected, as a nation, the Messiah, people can still come individually to the Messiah and be saved through faith. And this is going to make up the early church, by the way. The church hasn't started, but these will be the people that make up the early church. These are the believing remnant of Israel. Jesus crossed back to the Jewish side of the Sea of Galilee, so that's kind of where we're at, and see this synagogue ruler named Jairus comes to Jesus and pleads for him to come and heal his 12-year-old daughter. See, the synagogue ruler believes in Jesus, and Jesus now only does miracles for those who have personal faith in him, just like the woman cured of blood. And so Jairus believes in him. So in the text, the people thronged Jesus. That means they came around him and everybody was touching him. The Greek gives the idea that they were pressing upon him, almost to the point of suffocation is the idea. So all these people are around Jesus. So the crowd was packed around him, and many people are touching him. Like, so you can picture that in your mind. But with all these people touching him, this woman touches him who has this blood disorder that she's had for 12 years. And again, there's something to that. She's touching him, and all these other people are touching him, but she, her touch, he feels, so to speak, the faith. He senses that this person who touched him had faith. Now, being God, he knows it. He knows who it is, but he's responding to her faith, is the idea. All these other people who are touching him are not responding to him in faith. Well, with this woman with a blood disorder, according to Leviticus 15, 19 through 32, this would have made her permanently, ceremonially unclean. The woman had suffered under many physicians, as it said, as Luke said, the physician, and had bankrupt herself trying to heal her of her infirmities. But notice that Luke, the physician, drops the reference to having suffered many things at the hands of many physicians. You notice that. A physician, he's commenting on other physicians. Now check this out. The woman touched the borders of his garments, which according to Mosaic law would have been the tasseled part. So basically, she touched one of the tassels, to get real specific. Okay, so in Jesus' day, how did they go about healing people, or physicians tried to go heal people of these kinds of infirmities? Well, it was pretty wild, and this is why she probably spent a lot of her money doing all these crazy things. In rabbinic writings, there are many ways of curing a woman of her blood disease. And these rituals included a lot of crazy stuff. And let me give you kind of a background with them so you know what she's probably been through. The first one is you make a mixture of gum, of Alexandrium, alum, and a crocus in equal parts and give to a woman with wine. And then you say, arise from your flux. Now, if that didn't work, you drink a purge of onions boiled in wine. And you say, arise from your flux. And if that doesn't work, you set her in a crossroads, let her hold a cup of wine in her hand, and let someone come up from behind and scare her and say, arise from your flux. And if that doesn't work, you take a handful of cumin and of crocus and boil them in wine for her to drink and say, arise from your flux. Now, if that doesn't work, you dig 7 ditches, burn some cuttings of trees younger than 4 years old, and have her sit over all 7 ditches and say, arise from your flux. Now, that's the background of the first century. That's what the physicians in the first century did for people like this. I mean, it's kind of bizarre, but that's the medical advances were not very good back then. So if you got something, you pretty much had that all your life, or you died of it. So these are the kinds of things she was subjected to. But when she touches Jesus by faith, she recognizes that she is instantly healed. And Jesus knows that healing has gone out from him, or power has left him. He asks, who's touched him? Again, this is not for him to know. It's for the woman to confess who she is. The disciples are amazed that he asked this, since they don't understand what has just happened. Jesus tells the woman to go in peace, and her faith has made her well. Now notice this. This is the big point. Jesus corrects the woman's theology in that it was her faith that made her whole, not touching of his garment. It was not the act or a ritual or anything like that, and it was her faith. And many people believe this. You see this in the Roman Catholic Church. People do rituals and certain things, and they touch certain things. And it's not the act. It's what Jesus is looking for is faith. And so he corrects her and says, your faith has made you well. Your faith has healed you. And so that's an important distinction that the Lord corrects with her. Okay. So she's corrected. She's healed. And so this incident causes the delay, but he's going to do something even more miraculous. Even though Jairus' daughter was sick, she has now passed away. And so the message gets sent to him and to Jairus that his daughter has died. And then Jesus reassures Jairus, fear not, only believe. That's what he's asking Jairus to do. Just don't fear this. Just believe in me. So Jairus has just witnessed the miracle of healing right in front of him. So the point is, if he can see this miracle happen in front of him, then he should expect, by faith, Jesus be able to do something for his daughter. And so it's preparing him in that way, in that sense. Jesus travels to Jairus' house, asks the crowd, why are they making such a tumult? And they laugh at him to scorn. So he disperses the crowd because they don't believe. They're ridiculing him. They're mocking him. And so he goes into the child with the parents and the 3 of the disciples. So now all the disciples went. The miracle is done in private as he is no longer doing public miracles for the nation of Israel. And you'll see this for the rest of the time. And then he says in Aramaic, rise up. So again, he charges them, when she comes back to life, to tell no one. And this is Luke 8:56, in keeping with his new policy of not doing signs for the nation of Israel, only for individual believers. Remember, he told Israel, they asked for a sign after they had rejected him. He goes, no sign will be given to you except the sign of Jonah. And so, again, this is why it's private, and that people who do not believe are not privileged to see this. And so, again, let's just reiterate, signs are no longer for the purpose of bringing Israel to make a decision. Israel's already made their decision. They will be used to train the disciples for their upcoming ministry. The change is from signs for the nation to signs for the disciples. And if you noticed in the text, the number 12 kept coming up in the text. She had 12 years of bleeding. Jairus' daughter is 12 years old. How many disciples were there? 12. And again, it's again reiterating the point that he's training the disciples. To reiterate about miracles, there's two facets. Prior to the rejection, when Jesus healed someone, there was no requirement for the individual to have personal faith, because the miracle was for the purpose of witnessing Jesus' claims to Israel as being the Messiah. And again, the change is from multitudes without faith to individuals with faith. Secondly, regarding miracles, when Jesus healed anyone prior to the rejection, he told them to proclaim great things God had done for them. Now notice in this text, and it's reflecting this change, from to tell all to tell no one. Do not tell anybody about this. Did you notice that in the text? That's what he told them to do after he raised Jairus' daughter from the dead. Don't tell anybody. Three, his message has now changed. Jesus has proclaimed his message of Messiahship in the synagogues and the cities. Now he will tell his disciples to tell no one who he is. The change is from the proclamation of his Messiahship to silence about his Messiahship. And we have already seen that. When Peter makes the declaration in Matthew 16, when he asks people, who does people say that I am? And Jesus makes his great statement, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. At the end of that passage, it's Jesus warns them not to tell anybody this. His teaching method changed, like I mentioned before. Before the rejection, he clearly taught so that people would understand. Now he's teaching in parables. The change is from a clear teaching to a parabolic teaching. And so we're gonna continue to look at this throughout these next lessons, where he is now preparing the disciples for the church. And so we'll pick up on this next week.